The views and opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of WEFT-FM, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. And now here is this week's edition of IMC Radio News.
Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
It's 5:30 on Monday evening, and it's time for the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center Radio News, your source for community news on your community radio station, WEFT 90.1 FM. It's Monday, February 2nd, 2004. I'm Sarah Knaus, your host and producer this week, and I'll be bringing you a number of news stories produced by people just like you. Tonight, we'll take a closer look at a local instance of the media blackout of anti-war or anti-Bush messages, hear an in-depth report from the Urbana City Council's recent meeting on the proposed Walmart development, and debut a new feature called Citizen Speak, in which we bring you the musings and commentary of some of your neighbors. But first, these indie media headlines from around Illinois.
I'm Maggie Quirk.
And I'm Ben Erickson.
Bringing you this week's indie media headlines from around Illinois. On Monday, January 26th, 20 activists demonstrated in freezing temperatures in front of Urbana's Carl Foundation Hospital in support of Lynn Sprout, the fired pediatric nurse who says Carl discriminated against her due to her sexual orientation. Sprout's case was set to be heard by the Urbana Human Rights Commission, but the commission granted Carl's request for an extension on the grounds that their lawyers needed more time to prepare for the case. Many motorists honked in support of the demonstrators, while at least one swerved close to the sidewalk and splashed the activists with mud and slush. The activists were unfazed. Kimberly Kranick, organizer of the rally, promises to keep fighting for gay and lesbian rights at Carl with monthly demonstrations. Sprout contends that Carl's refusal to extend family leave to care for her terminally ill lesbian partner of 18 years and her subsequent dismissal after coming out as a lesbian to her supervisor represents a violation of Urbana's human rights ordinance, which has prohibited discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation since the mid-1970s. Carl contends that Sprout was fired for poor job performance. The hearing has been rescheduled for May 2004.
Also on January 26, 22 activists received sentences of 3 to 6 months in federal prison on misdemeanor federal trespass charges stemming from last November's protests of the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, better known as the School of the Americas. Illinois resident Kathy Kelly of the human rights group Voices in the Wilderness received a 3-month prison sentence. Kelly was one of 27 defendants from across the country tried this week in Columbus, Georgia. The activists were among 10,000 who gathered in November to call for the closure of the SOA, which they called a terrorist training camp on U.S. soil. Graduates of the controversial combat training school for Latin American soldiers continue to be implicated in human rights atrocities throughout Latin America.
And on Saturday, January 31st, activists in Chicago held the first ever Chicago Social Forum. The day-long event brought together people from different backgrounds and different movements across the city in discussion, debate, and solidarity. Inspired by the World Social Forum, which 2 weeks ago brought 80,000 people to Mumbai, India, organizers sought to create a dialogue for activists to imagine a more just, sustainable Chicago. A movement of movements, the Chicago Social Forum seeks to create an ongoing center for activism that can educate, organize, and mobilize diverse campaigns for social justice. The next social forum will be held in Quito, Ecuador in March. This first continental forum will cover key global themes focusing on the particular circumstances in the Americas.
This week, local public broadcaster WILL initially refused to accept underwriting from AWARE, the anti-war, anti-racism effort, on the grounds that their name was too controversial. While a compromise solution was reached, Sandra Otten observes that de facto censorship of political speech by the media, as exemplified by CBS's refusal to air a MoveOn.org ad during yesterday's Super Bowl, is becoming increasingly acceptable.
On local and national levels, paid advertisement that criticizes the war or the Bush administration is being censored. In Urbana, Illinois, the public radio station, a division of the University of Illinois, will not accept underwriting from AWARE, the anti-war, anti-racism effort, stating that the name itself is controversial. On a national level, CBS refused to air an ad for MoveOn.org during the Super Bowl yesterday. Lisa Chasen from Urbana, Illinois, describes the decision by the public radio station WILL that requires them to omit the full reading of the group's name in order to buy underwriting.
The organization's name is AWARE, the anti-war, anti-racism effort. And we're rather surprised to hear that the interpretation of the corporate manager who was involved with selling this airtime, it was his interpretation of the guidelines that they work under that we couldn't make the statement that we wanted to because it was too politically charged. He made the case that they wouldn't sell airtime to the NRA either because, according to their guidelines, underwriting credits may not contain language that directly or indirectly advocates particular positions or points of view on controversial issues.
A compromise with the station was reached in which the anti-war group could say their name was AWARE and they could say that they worked for peace and social justice, but their underwriting could not say their name or their website address because it included the words anti-war. CBS, which is owned by Viacom, refused to run an ad for MoveOn.org during the Super Bowl yesterday. MoveOn.org is a nonpartisan grassroots organization that has empowered millions of people to get involved or re-involved in politics through web-based efforts. Through donations from their MoveOn.org voter fund, they raise the money to buy airtime to get their message to the tens of millions of viewers who were tuned to the Super Bowl yesterday. Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat from Illinois, who spoke from the Senate floor against the censorship by CBS, describes the ad.
This ad, as I've seen it on MoveOn.org, shows just basic photos of children working at adult jobs. They're clearly out of place at assembly lines and at the back of dumpsters. And then at the end it says, guess who's going to pay for George W. Bush's trillion-dollar deficit? I think it's important because it raises an important public issue, and it does it in a responsible fashion. And I don't think there's any exaggeration in it. President Bush acknowledges in his budget message that the deficit is at least $1 trillion, maybe larger. And it's certainly obvious that our children are going to face the responsibility of paying off this debt. To raise that question for families to consider during a public broadcast where a lot of Americans are tuned in seems reasonable to me.
Robert McChesney, media analyst, explains why CBS, which is owned by Viacom, may feel forced to censor ads that are critical of the Bush administration.
This effort by Viacom, by CBS, is opposed by the overwhelming majority of American people and by the Congress, both the Senate and House. In fact, in the past year, both the Senate and the House have voted to keep the ownership limit on the number of TV stations a single company could own nationally. The vote in the House was 400-21. But while this is going on the floor of the House and in public, behind closed doors, the Bush administration has been leading the fight to raise these limits, very much doing the bidding of Viacom and Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation, leading the fight so they can buy more and more media.
Senator Durbin explained that this provision was sneaked into the omnibus appropriation bill that passed last week and was signed by the president. It was an appropriation that established a new ceiling of 39% as the maximum percentage of American TV viewers in a market that may be reached by TV stations owned by one company. He pointed out that not coincidentally, this directly benefited Viacom, whose levels had reached 38.8%, and Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation that had reached 37.8% of the market. I asked Senator Durbin how, despite the vote by Congress, this could have happened.
Well, it turns out you can do almost anything in an appropriation bill, and when you control both the House and the Senate, as Republicans do, the White House came in and said, this is what we will accept. At the last minute, it was put into the bill on a take-it-or-leave-it basis, some seven different appropriation bills thrown into one. This omnibus monster bill passed and was signed into law, has the same impact as any law of the land. The budget really sets out the plan for spending. The appropriation bills actually appropriate the money for each agency. And then there are add-ons, legislative riders that are put in bills. And so you ended up with a bill including billions of dollars of spending and a handful of very controversial legislative measures on a take-it-or-leave-it basis.
CBS was unresponsive to the groundswell of condemnation that their censoring of the ad ensued. The criticism came from organizations such as the National Organization for Women and the ACLU, as well as 28 members of the House of Representatives who wrote a letter to CBS and Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat from Oregon. In response, MoveOn.org staged a one-minute boycott of the Super Bowl, enlisting supporters to switch channels to CNN at 8:10 and 8:35. CNN did play the censored ads.
And our feature story tonight is a report on the recent city council meeting in which approval for the Walmart development plan was given over overwhelming public outcry. Zach Miller brings us this story.
On Tuesday, January 20th, the Urbana City Council voted 4-0 to approve a preliminary plat for a Walmart development in East Urbana at the corner of Illinois Routes 130 and 150. Council members Pat, Wyman, Chenoweth, and Hayes voted to approve the plat. Council members Huth and Whalen were absent, and Ward 7 Councilmember Milton Otto recused himself because his brother, Wilmer Otto, owns the land that Walmart wishes to develop. The mayor explained to the overflow audience that he believes that the city's hands are tied in the matter of this plat agreement.
Our code reads that if the developer meets all the criteria, then the council is required to approve it. We can deny the preliminary plat only if we see that one or more of these criteria are not met. In that case, we would have to inform the developer which of those criteria are not met and allow them to supply that information so that they can bring it back for approval.
Over 40 members of the public were present to express their concerns about this Walmart development plan. Neighboring landowners were concerned about increased flooding on their property and light pollution from a Walmart parking lot.
I'm a sculptor, not an engineer, but I can figure volume, so I took this little tiny map with the figures and arrows, and I started figuring out things in terms I could understand. A 3-inch rain on this 76-acre development will produce 7.5 million gallons of water. That's astounding. This will be shunted ultimately into a 120-foot-wide diversion ditch, which carries the water east. Acres of pavements and roofing will absorb none of it. The ditch drops 20 feet in elevation from the Walmart site to the detention pond on the east, directly across from our property. This pond, marked on the map by saying future retention, regional retention, pond by others, will hold little more than 2 million gallons if it's empty when it starts raining. Where's the rest going to go? It's going to leach into my property. The rest is going to go onto Dr. Bruner's property. Additional runoff is provided by a storm sewer that comes from Route 130 and runs into the detention area behind the building, which runs into the diversion ditch. Runoff from Route 150, whose flooding problems have not been resolved with the improvements to it, is also diverted into this very same ditch. This is just one storm. Spring commonly brings waves of these storms. What happens the next day when the site gets another couple of inches? These problems could incapacitate our septic system, leaving us with a six-digit mortgage for a property on which we can no longer live.
Many Urbana residents were worried about the potential impact Walmart would have on existing Urbana retail, such as Schnucks, Jerry's IGA, Farm and Fleet, Walgreens, and County Market.
So first of all, we have low-paying jobs without benefits will replace better-paying jobs with benefits in other stores, creating more working poor in our area and increasing costs to taxpayers in the way of public services. Second is higher costs for police. Third is the cost of providing sewers, electricity, and other services to this store, plus the added cost of additional traffic to the area. Fourth is that the drainage in this area is very poor. Fifth is that building on the outskirts of town goes against the city's goal of redeveloping downtown and other areas of the city. Sixth, building on the outskirts creates more urban sprawl, or maybe more appropriately for Urbana, urban crawl. We should be filling in areas that are no longer used, such as the old Kmart site on Philo Road, rather than building new buildings on the edge of town. Seventh, in 10 to 15 years, the store is likely to be empty, leaving an ugly, empty space that's not used and attracts vandalism. Eighth, a Walmart supercenter will take grocery business away from Urbana grocery stores such as Schnucks, the two county markets, and the IGA on Philo Road. The IGA and county market in Sunnycrest Mall are patronized by many people in the area without cars, and they would have much difficulty doing grocery shopping in those two stores if those two stores shut down. In addition, this would lead to further demise of Sunnycrest area, which is one of Urbana's priority redevelopment areas. Ninth, Walmart is not known to give back to the communities in which it opens up shop as compared to locally owned businesses which are involved in the community. Tenth, Walmart is known for its unscrupulous business practices in general, and I think those are pretty well documented and known by many of the people here.
Residents speaking before the council asked why the Walmart could not be located on North Cunningham or near Sunnycrest, where Urbana already has existing retail districts. Two members of the public were present to express their support for the Walmart plan, citing an inability to buy many consumer goods in Urbana.
I very strongly support the location of Walmart, Floormart, Kmart, or whatever you might put out there in that zone you're talking about, so that I support the approval of what's before you.
And like they say, we don't have any business in Urbana. We pay taxes in Urbana. Our tax is the highest. It's $8,000 we pay for taxes. And why I want to go in Champaign, for grocery, for clothing, for everything, why I don't spend my money in Urbana? That's what I want to spend, and I support Walmart to come and another business to be open.
The city was clearly divided as Mayor Sathwaite's own father and sister, as well as friends and supporters of council members, rose in opposition to the Walmart plan.
Next, two will show that even a family can be divided on this issue. Tracy, my sister.
Yeah, I'm the less public one of the family. I just would like to say that I think that we do like to think of Urbana as being an intelligent, progressive community. We're a group of people who like to see good schools. We like to see good libraries, good parks. But we also like to see low taxes. And that brings with it a lot of problems when you don't have a lot of business to back up those wishes. So we think about development, and we've been looking at development for a long time and a lot of opposition towards development. The only thing that I want to say is, why do we right now want to, after having tried to fight it for so long, why do we go to the lowest common denominator? I'd like it for us to think about the decisions we make and what that's going to mean for the future of our community.
After over an hour of heated public input about specific concerns with this plat and general concerns with the impact of Walmart on the local economy, council members proceeded to discuss the technicalities of the plat. Interviewing city staff, council members ensured that a public sidewalk would surround the Walmart, the trees would be planted, and that all parking lot lighting would point downwards. It was further clarified that Walmart would pay for all these aspects of the development. While Wyman and Pat stuck to the technicalities of the plat agreement, Chenoweth took an opportunity to concur with residents' complaints and to encourage a local movement against Walmart. She further explained that she believed the city had no leverage in this development because Walmart was developing the land by right and was not asking for any incentives from the city.
That's a ridiculous question. Would I vote for Walmart? Would I vote for lock-ins, child labor violations, gender discrimination, discrimination against the disabled, goods made by children or those under slave conditions? Of course I'm not going to vote for Walmart. I haven't been given the opportunity to vote for Walmart.
After extending the late-running meeting, all the council members present voted to approve the plat. Walmart was only able to apply for this development agreement because the city rezoned the land in question from industrial to retail use in September of 2003. At that meeting, local residents and the mayor expressed an understanding that Walmart would be a likely developer of this land, but council members claimed that the rezoning measure was unrelated to any Walmart bid.
I don't understand why you say you don't have a vote in this. This council okayed the zoning change for this. A council member said that this was a done deal a year and a half ago.
This vote to approve Walmart came just 1 week after the New York Times exposed labor violations, including violations of child labor laws, lock-ins, and denial of breaks to workers at Walmart stores nationwide. Additional resources regarding this story can be found on the web at urbana-first.shambana.net. Reporting for IMC Radio News, this is Zach Miller.
And next, Sandra Otten brings us the first ever edition of Citizen Speak.
The IMC Radio News is offering an edition this week that we are calling Citizen Speak. This week we have two commentaries. The first is by local web blogger Ben Grosser. You can find complete commentaries along with supporting links at www.criticalviewer.com. His commentary from January 22nd entitled, Dean Jill, Where's Judy? Go Edwards and Duh.
First off, let's talk about Dean's now infamous yell in his Iowa concession speech. If you didn't catch this, Dean concluded his speech after the Iowa caucus with a rapid, rumbling, and excited yell that sounded something like, Wah! The media is all over this, how it's ruined him in the polls, how people think he's crazy, etc. Check out Howard Kurtz's media roundup on Washington Post for more information. Come on, the guy was excited, tired, and trying to rally his tired troops with a lively speech. I'd suggest critiquing his positions on the issues instead of his guttural noises. Second, have you caught any of this blathering questioning Dean's fitness for the presidency because his wife isn't around enough? Article after article appeared before and after Iowa about Judith Steinberg Dean. Who is she? Why doesn't she wear makeup? Where's her jewelry? Why doesn't she campaign 24/7 with Howard? How can she be that busy? What does it all mean? Etc., etc. The woman is a doctor with a high school teenager at home. What's she supposed to do? Spouses can have different interests and responsibilities, and it's refreshing to see a man seeking the White House that is comfortable enough with a quality that he doesn't need his wife cheerleading behind him like a prop. There are definitely some truths to Dean's claims of media bias over the last few weeks. Howard and Judith talked on ABC Primetime Thursday after the debate tonight to try and smooth out some of these issues. I caught a bit of this, and Judy Dean comes across as a regular, intelligent woman that supports her spouse and has her own life. When asked what she would do with all the media scrutiny of her hair and her clothes that would occur in the White House, she said it just really wasn't that important and that Howard's actions would overshadow her unfancy hair. Let's hope her high expectations of the media are accurate. I'm not so sure. I correctly predicted John Edwards' second place Iowa finish last week, and I like him more every time I see him speak. First, he gave some very clear answers on the gun issue. He wants to extend the Brady assault weapons ban when it expires next year, close the gun show loophole, and wants to require trigger locks. He clearly stated his support of the Second Amendment, but wants to keep guns out of the hands of convicted criminals. Frankly, it was refreshing for a candidate to come out so clear on a divisive issue. More on this later due to Congress passing new NRA-backed gun laws today. Second is that he's clearly the most telegenic of the Democratic candidates. I don't care much about looks, but being afraid everyone else does care, I pay attention to this. Kerry, on the other hand, isn't that great on TV, but did fine overall. No big plus or minus for him in tonight's performance. Dean was a bit apologetic and calm, did a good job, and I'd predict a boost in the polls for him. Finally, why don't Dean and Kucinich realize the obvious best response to anyone who questions their positions against the Iraq war resolution? What they have to remind everyone of is that all the U.S. needed to do was wait a few more weeks before the shock and awe. France, Germany, the UN, and others only wanted a bit more time to continue the ongoing weapons inspections. At that point, nothing had been found, and all signs led them to believe there was nothing to find. Had Bush waited, he either would have a broad, international, UN-led coalition in Iraq that shared the financial and death burdens of war, or we would have been satisfied that sanctions, etc., had been effective and war would have been avoided. In that case, we'd now have an additional 500 Americans, 10,000 Iraqis, continued international support, and an extra $150 billion.
And now, here's commentary from Mary Lee Sargent, former Urbana resident who now resides in New Hampshire, where she is busy today getting out the vote for Howard Dean. Her commentary from January 23rd.
Howard Dean is being attacked in the media for being too angry, for showing emotion and whooping it up after the Iowa caucuses. The criticism is not surprising, given that our political education as Americans teaches us to care mostly about appearances, about image and style and personality, rather than to know our self-interest and vote accordingly. As a newly retired older worker who is labeled middle class in our class unconscious society, I know what my class interests are, and I do vote accordingly. Because of my economic class, the class of 90% of Americans who are waged workers, strapped with mortgages, credit card debt, rising health insurance premiums, rising college tuition, and property taxes, I think anger is totally appropriate. I am angry to the point of rage that the progressive gains of the last century, the 40-hour work week, Social Security, Medicare, health insurance as a benefit of employment, free public education are being eroded and destroyed by the Bush administration and its allies in Congress. Because our people are not taught history or political science in depth, we are unaware that many of us get to be middle class because of the services our tax dollars provide. If we had to pay for our children's education, pay all our doctor and hospital bills, support our elderly parents, save from our wages the money we need to live on when we are old, we would be poor. We would have little disposable income for all the stuff we consume to soothe our overworked weariness. Years ago, some unions traded a shorter work week for benefits like health insurance. Now we work more hours a year than any people on earth, and they are still coming after our Social Security, our Medicare, our health insurance benefits, our children's public education. We should all remember that the preamble to the U.S. Constitution states that a primary purpose of our government is to, quote, promote the general welfare. I am also angry at the Democratic Leadership Council that moved our party to the right and serves as a historical parallel to the Wall Street Democrats of President Cleveland's administration in the 1880s and 90s, pro-corporate and anti-worker to the core. I am angry at the Democratic presidential candidates, Senators Kerry and Lieberman and Edwards, who have been passive and not gotten angry as our futures and our status as middle-class people are compromised. They voted for tax cuts for the rich and to spend billions on a war for conquest and corporate profits rather than on schools, securing Social Security and Medicare, and health insurance for all. I wish they had been angry, like I am, and Howard Dean.
That concludes this edition of Citizens Speak. The views expressed are solely those of the speakers. If you would like to have commentary considered for Citizens Speak, email radio@ucimc.org.
That's it for another week of the IMC Radio News. We're grassroots, we're local, and we're just regular folk. This show was hosted and produced by me, Sarah Knaus, with stories by Sandra Otten and Zach Miller. Maggie Quirk and Ben Erickson read the headlines. Until next week, check out our website at www.ucimc.org or, better yet, volunteer. If you don't think you need a degree to be a journalist, stop by the IMC at 218 West Main Street in downtown Urbana. We have audio and video production equipment and a monthly newspaper, and we want to give you the resources you need to tell your story.